It is 5 hours Universal Time. Stay tuned for Daybreak Africa coming up after these latest world news headlines.
A senior African banking official warns the Ebola crisis is causing enormous economic damage. A third doctor dies of the deadly virus in Sierra Leone. I'm Victor Beatty reporting from Washington. The head of the African Development Bank warned Wednesday the Ebola outbreak is causing enormous damage to West African economies as foreign business quits the region and international transport suspends services. ADB President Donald Kerberuka said in Freetown some economies may lose up to 4% of their gross domestic product.
Revenues are down. Foreign exchange levels are down. Markets are not functioning. Airlines are not coming in. Projects have been cancelled. Business people have left. That is very, very damaging. Now, add to that the fact that this rainy season and people are not farming. So prices are going up, price of produce, at a time when purchasing power is limited. You are increasing poverty.
Liberia has already said it will lower its 2014 growth forecast. A Sierra Leonean official said his government will miss its target of exporting some $200 million in diamonds this year. Miners, he said, are too afraid to report to work in Ebola-impacted eastern areas. The ADB has pledged $60 million to train medical personnel and purchase supplies to combat the virus. Air France announced Wednesday it's suspending flights to Sierra Leone but maintaining those to Guinea and Nigeria. British Airways earlier said it was suspending flights until next year to both Sierra Leone and Liberia. Meanwhile, a third doctor in Sierra Leone has died of Ebola. Dr. Sar Rogers worked at a hospital in the eastern town of Kanema. The United Nations Wednesday said it's providing $1.5 million to help Democratic Republic of Congo fight the Ebola virus. This is VOA News. Later today, U.S. health officials are expected to announce a human study of an Ebola vaccine by GlaxoSmithKline to begin in a couple of weeks. And Reuters reports the National Institutes of Health, along with the U.S. Defense Department, have approved the first step toward using three advanced laboratories to manufacture Ebola vaccines and treatments. The emergency coordinator of the medical aid group Doctors Without Borders warned Wednesday the number of cases in Liberia is rising rapidly and overstretching staff.
The numbers is going up rapidly, faster than what we thought, forcing us to adapt our plans and our strategy on a daily basis. It is really an extremely challenging situation for everyone. And MSF, we can't do more than we're doing now. We've opened this center a week ago. It's completely full today. We are desperately trying to get more beds. We have bulldozers and rub holes getting up. We're recruiting staff, we're training staff. But we would like to do much, much more, but our first priority needs to be the security and safety of our staff.
Lindis Hurum also said the Liberian healthcare system has more or less broken down, with many facilities closed and staff afraid to report to work. She says the region faces a humanitarian crisis that is worsening every day. Also in Liberia Wednesday, Dr. Tom Frieden of the U.S. Centers for Disease Control warned the cases of Ebola are increasing, warning the crisis will get worse before it gets better. In Nigeria, there's a debate over the wisdom of delaying the opening of schools by a month over the Ebola matter. Heather Murdoch reports.
Rose Calton, a senior member of the union that represents public school teachers in Kaduna State, says the school delay is part of the Nigerian government's well-praised rapid response to the Ebola crisis that began here in July.
It's very welcome, and we want to appreciate them for that. And we should not think this thing will affect the education of our children. It won't. It will help us, and it will help our children too.
Other education professionals say keeping schools closed is unnecessary and illogical. Private school owner Murtala Muhammad says the government seems to be contradicting itself, assuring Nigerians the Ebola threat is all but past on the same day it announces that schools will not open. The bigger problem Nigerian schools face, he says, is neglect and insecurity. Nigerian schools are being dragged down by lack of resources, long teacher strikes, and declining attendance, he says. Heather Murdoch for VOA News, Abuja.
Parliamentary leaders in Niger have authorized the arrest of the legislature's president, Hama Amadou, on suspicions he was involved in a baby trafficking network. He calls the charges politically motivated. The French press agency quotes state television as saying Mr. Amadou has fled to Burkina Faso. I'm Victor Beatty, VOA News.
That's the latest world news from VOA.
Good morning, Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Barty in Washington. Today is Thursday, August 28th, and here are some of the stories we are following. African expatriates in the United States send medical supplies to Ebola-stricken West African nations.
Most of it, too, is more at the preventive level to make sure that the kind of outbreak that we saw in Liberia, that we see in Sierra Leone, doesn't get to that level in Nigeria.
Chris Ibulam is the founder and director of Action Africa. The World Health Organization says killer diseases will worsen with climate change. South Sudan rebels say their leader did not sign Monday's cessation of hostilities agreement. And where's Zambian President Michael Sata?
He'll be addressing the nation soon. He's opening parliament next month in September, and that's an address to the nation. And then he'll be celebrating the 50th anniversary of our independence on October the 24th.
Guy Scott is Zambia's vice president. Zimbabwe police beat up demonstrators demanding jobs. And another look at Nigeria's Nollywood movie Magic Machine. Those stories plus Mark Oldman's sports and our listener of the day are coming up on Daybreak Africa. The health organizations from around the world are sending supplies and specialists to the West African countries that are dealing with the worst Ebola outbreak in history. On a smaller scale, ordinary Americans and African expatriates living in the United States are doing the same. VOA's Carol Pearson reports.
Outside a home in Washington, a sign reads, Help Action Africa send supplies to Sierra Leone to fight Ebola. Inside, there are boxes filled with latex gloves, chlorine bleach, and other items. All are going to Sierra Leone to help in the effort to end the Ebola crisis. Chris Ebulam of Action Africa organized the effort.
I was born on the African continent, and I continue to remain connected with the people on the mother continent.
Ebulam also helps his neighbors connect with countries fighting Ebola. A Lutheran church donated the metal school desks because these desks can be disinfected and keep Ebola from spreading. Other churches raised money to ship the goods. The shipping company scaled back its fee to just cover the costs. And ordinary Americans contributed as well.
People came on the day we did our publicity here from North Carolina. They brought supplies. We have people from Virginia, from faraway Maryland. People have responded very powerfully.
This container left the port of Baltimore and is due to arrive in Sierra Leone in early September. Action Africa also is sending another shipment of medical supplies to Nigeria.
We have a group of 25 hospitals that are going to be working with those supplies, and most of it too is more at the preventive level to make sure that the kind of outbreak that we saw in Liberia, that we see in Sierra Leone, and doesn't get to that level in Nigeria.
Eric Wowo came to the United States as a refugee from Liberia. He settled in Louisiana, where he's gathering supplies to help Liberians fight Ebola. Chlorine kills the Ebola virus, so people in West Africa mix it with water to wash their hands.
This could save a whole household in Liberia against the spread of Ebola. Liberia, this would be like $10, just one of these, which most family cannot afford.
Americans are donating soap, water, medical gloves, protective glasses, and the like.
The people from this area cannot go directly to Liberia, but they can do something to help in the process.
Wowo says these simple donations will help save hundreds of thousands of people. His goal is to send a shipment with food and medical supplies every month until the deadly virus is brought under control. Carol Pearson, VOA News.
The World Health Organization says major killer diseases will spread and health problems will worsen with climate change. The WHO, which is holding the first global conference on health and climate, is urging nations to act quickly to reduce the emissions of greenhouse gases which lead to climate change. Lisa Schlein reports for VOA from the conference in Geneva.
Some countries may see localized benefits from global warming. For example, cold countries will experience fewer winter deaths from more temperate weather. They may also enjoy increased food production. The World Health Organization, however, says the overall health effects are likely to be overwhelmingly negative. Maria Nera is director of the Public Health, Environmental and Social Determinants of Health Department at WHO. She says every year, 7 million people die prematurely because of air pollution, but that number can be cut.
We can reduce dramatically non-communicable diseases, cardiovascular diseases, heart disease, respiratory diseases, by promoting, for instance, a more sustainable, low-carbon society, where instead of using very pollutant solid fuels, we will move into a more sustainable energy consumption, and therefore, by doing so, we will obtain plenty of benefits for our health.
Dr. Nera says the health community is working to improve surveillance to control infectious diseases. She notes deadly diseases such as cholera, malaria, and dengue are highly sensitive to weather and climate. Recent WHO figures find climate change already causes tens of thousands of deaths every year from shifting patterns of disease and extreme weather events such as heats and floods. It warns climate change is expected to cause approximately 250,000 additional deaths every year between 2030 and 2050 due to heat exposure, diarrhea, malaria, and childhood undernutrition. The WHO notes that climate change also has serious economic consequences. The UN agency says the direct damage to costs to health is estimated to be between $2 and $4 billion a year by 2030. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
Zambian President Michael Sata plans to address the nation next month as he officially opens parliament, a move intended to contradict reports that questions about his health had led to a power struggle within the ruling Patriotic Front Party. The president was last seen in public on June 19th when he met with visiting Chinese vice president. Some opposition and civil society groups have demanded that the government come clean on Sata's health. But Vice President Guy Scott tells reporter Peter Clotty the speculation about the president's alleged poor health is politically motivated and intended to undermine the government's popularity.
Well, my view is that in any party with more than one member, there's going to be something resembling wrangling. Okay, I mean, you know, someone's going to want to wrangle with someone else. People are always going to maximize their influence. I don't think these current wrangles are really involve very senior people. And I don't think and some of them based upon an assumption which I think was put around in the wrong quarters, that the president is not well and he's going to have to withdraw or he'll die or something. I think all that is the more intelligent people are realizing that's not so. And we're getting on with putting our party back in a commanding position. Because obviously if we spend our time accusing each other of things, we're not going to get very far.
Well,
I think it's more or less politics as normal. I don't think there's anything very exceptional about it.
Mr. Vice President, there were concerns that the president has not been seen in public since June and that even the recent U.S.-Africa summit, you represented the president, and they are expressing concern that the president should address the nation and dispel such rumors.
But he'll be addressing the nation soon. He's opening parliament next month in September. And that's an address to the nation. Then he'll be attending the UN, and then he'll be celebrating the 50th anniversary of our independence on October the 24th. So I think people should take it easy and not listen to rumors. You know, it's a problem. You have it in the States of social media or whatever you want to call it. And, you know, there's far too many stories and far too few facts. And I think we should maintain at least the quality of traditional journalism.
So far, how are preparations ahead of the celebration, 50 years of celebration of the independence of Zambia?
They seem to be well ahead. We've got, a good guest list. We've got a good program, and I think, frankly, we'll be proud of it. I mean, I know you guys are well past your 200, but this is our first important milestone, half-century milestone. We intend to make a go of it. By the way, just coming back to your question about the U.S.-African meeting in Washington, for the 3 years we've been in power, I have attended these kind of ad hoc arrangements. I've been to all kinds of countries that I never thought I'd see on behalf of the president. and it's and SADC I tend to represent him at non-aligned movement and so forth. The UN and the African Union, he does himself, and he always does them himself. There's no change. Just because you happen to see, you know, Africa's only white vice president turn up in Washington when you were maybe expecting a president. Well, that, for Zambia, that's not unusual.
Guy Scott is Zambia's vice president. He spoke with reporter Peter Clotty from the capital, Lusaka. You're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Barty in Washington. Today is Thursday, August 20th. Daybreak Africa time is coming up at 16 minutes past the hour. A South Sudan rebel official says there can be no lasting peace in the country as long as President Salva Kiir is at the helm of government. Ezekiel Low Gatkuof, former South Sudan ambassador to the United States, says Kiir is a symbol of disunity who does not enjoy the support of majority of South Sudanese. There were reports Monday that the warring parties had signed a cessation of hostilities agreement in Addis Ababa, but in a statement issued Thursday from Addis Ababa, the rebels said they were not part of the negotiations and that their leader, former Vice President Riek Machar, did not sign the agreement. Gatkuof tells me EGA mediators presented a blank document to Machar to sign, but he refused to sign without the text.
Our position is very clear that first, we must negotiate as two warring parties so that we can reach an agreement and then now sign it, and then the EGA leaders should be the one to witness it. It is not the other way around. So that agreement, which was our protocol, which was signed in Addis Ababa, we were not consulted. The two parties did not negotiate this agreement. And basically, Dr. Riek Machar, if you see in the agreement, his signature was missing because he was not supposed to sign in the first place. And he was not given the text together with Salva Kiir. They were just told to sign here as if they were given a blank check to sign. So basically, it were the EGAD leaders who signed these documents.
Let me say that as recent as Monday night, when the news broke that agreement had been signed in Addis Ababa, I asked the military spokesman for the Juba government. And every time we speak to them, they accuse the rebels of consistently violating peace agreements or negotiations, whatever. Are you responsible for all negotiations or agreements signed not being implemented?
Of course, when the crisis started, we were in Juba. If you look at where they push us all the way now to Nasser, who is violating? The areas that they are taking now from us, they are the one pushing us. We were in Bor, they took Bor. We were in Bentiu, they took Bentiu. We were in Malakal, they took Malakal. We were in Nasser, they took Nasser. So who is actually aggressing? It is the government under Salva who is actually violating the cessation of hostilities agreement that we have signed in January 2014.
Ambassador, what is the main sticking point or stumbling block for your group that has to be overcome before a lasting peace can be achieved?
Of course, you need to have a total transformation of the country. You need to have a new leadership because you cannot continue to have Salva leading this country, whereby you have more than 70,000 South Sudanese in IDP camps. Even in Juba, there are more than 20, 30,000 who are in IDP camps because they are fearing him. They don't want to come out because they want Salva out. How can you reconcile, you reunite, you heal the country under him? It will not happen.
The EGA heads of state have given your group and the government in Juba 45 days to form a national unity government. Can a unity government be formed? And what are the steps that need to be taken before that?
A unity government can be formed because we believe that this war cannot be won militarily by Salva himself. He knows that. So for us, I think there is a possibility of having an agreement because the voices of the majority in South Sudan, they want peace. And 80% of the people of South Sudan, they are not happy with what is happening in the country under Salva Kiir. So Salva is not a uniting factor, it is a dividing factor.
Ezekiel Low Gatkuof is a former South Sudan ambassador to the United States and a member of the rebels. He spoke with me on Wednesday in our VOA Washington studio. In Zimbabwe, two opposition Movement for Democratic Change legislators and a freelance journalist were briefly detained Wednesday when heavily armed police clashed with protesters who were demanding jobs from President Robert Mugabe's government. Thomas Chiripasi of VOA Zimbabwe Service has details from Harare.
More than 300 youth gathered in Harare Central Business District sang revolutionary songs and held placards demanding that Mr. Mugabe fulfills his election promise of creating more than 2 million jobs. One of the placards read, "Mugabe, we want our jobs now." Outside Parliament, police details wielding baton sticks engaged in running battles with the youths of the Opposition Movement for Democratic Change Party, led by former Prime Minister Morgan Tsvangirai, blocking them from petitioning the National Assembly. Ordinary people who were in the Central Business District were also not spared of the beatings. Some officers were also stoned by the protesters in retaliation, resulting in several shop owners closing their businesses. Freelance journalist Anderson Manyere were among those arrested, according to acting youth spokesperson Love Mochinoputa.
The jobs campaign is a campaign by the MGC Youth Assembly to demand jobs from the illegitimate government of Robert Mugabe, which has failed to deliver its electoral promises of 2.2 million jobs. So today, the young people of Zimbabwe are demonstrating against the Robert Mugabe regime when the police came in their numbers and disrupted the demonstration by the young people. And in the process, they took the Member of Parliament from Avoku, James Maridad. They also took the chairperson of Harare, who is also the Member of Parliament for Harare East, Comrade Eric Murao, together with the spokesperson of the Youth Assembly, Comrade Clifford Tlachwayo, as well as Shakespeare Mkoi, who is the chairperson of Harare Province.
Chinoputa criticized the police for using maximum force to crush the demonstration. Maridadi, Murai, Manyere and Tlachwayo were later released without charge, although it is still unclear whether an unspecified number of other activists had been freed at the time of going to air. Meanwhile, Crisis in Zimbabwe Coalition chairperson Dewa Mavinga criticized the government for crushing the demonstration, saying the Harare administration is on the forefront of undermining constitutional democracy. Mavinga called on member states of the Southern African Development Community to rein in Mr. Mugabe, saying his actions were a threat to regional peace. Reporting from Harare, this is Thomas Chiripasi.
20 years after its birth in a video shop in Lagos, Nigeria's Nollywood is one of the most prolific film industries on earth. Despite low budgets and whirlwind production schedules, Nigerian films are widely popular in Africa, and industry professionals say they hope in the future their films will be as great in quality as they are in quantity. Heather Murdoch has more for VOA from Lagos.
As a generator hums on the roof, director F. Olu Michaels shoots his 14th episode of Remember Me, a soap opera about a girl with magical powers. He says since he got into the business 16 years ago, Nollywood has grown from a ragtag industry into a giant, producing thousands of films a year.
It has changed a lot. People, bad jobs don't really make waves anymore. If you don't do a good job, you are nowhere. Bad jobs just die along the line, but good jobs are recommended and people keep talking about it.
But Nollywood also suffers from the same woes as the rest of Nigeria. Widespread poverty, insecurity, and lack of electricity. As a result, Nigerian artists say their movies are made on tight budgets and films lack polish. At a fancy country club in Lagos, Olu Jacobs, one of Nollywood's most famous actors, says many movies are shot in only a week for less than $30,000.
We haven't got the money to prolong it for more than 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 days maximum. Otherwise, you run out of money.
But he says Nollywood movies are popular because they reflect themes Africans can relate to, instead of Hollywood's version of the continent, an exotic land of large wild animals and suffering villagers.
I am an eternal optimist. I will tell you that Nollywood is going to improve by leaps and bounds. You know, because more and more people and organizations are beginning to see that this field is respected outside this country.
That was VOA's Heather Murdoch reporting from Lagos. Time now for Daybreak Africa's portion. Here is Mark Ouma in Johannesburg, South Africa. A very good Thursday morning to you, Mark.
Good morning, James. In our Daybreak Africa Sports News, we begin with basketball. Burundi's Urunani beat Kenya Cooperative Bank 62-54 as Kenya's U.S. International University dismissed Tanzania's Don Bosco 73-49 in the men's contest at the Africa Zone 5 Club Basketball Championships in Mombasa, Kenya on Wednesday. In the women's matches, Rwanda's Army APR beat Ethiopia's Government House Agency 64-51 and Kenya Port Authority edged Kampala City Council Authority 53-49. In rugby, hosts Uganda beat Senegal 23-12 as Madagascar outclassed Zambia 43-0. In the Confederation of African Rugby Tier 1B semi-finals in Kampala. On Saturday, Uganda play Madagascar in the final while Senegal and Zambia clash in the bronze medal playoff. Turning to football, Football Kenya Federation head Sam Nyamweya told the Nairobi media they plan to present a joint East African bid to stage the 2017 Orange Africa Cup of Nations after Libya withdrew from staging the event. Nyamweya says they are consulting Rwanda, Tanzania and Uganda on the way forward. Meanwhile, Mali and Ethiopia are also interested in the bid. Turning to athletics, Uganda Athletics Federation head Dominic Otuchet told the Kampala media on Wednesday they will present their bid to stage the 2017 IAAF World Cross Country Championships next month. Uganda and Bahrain are bidding to stage the event. In Switzerland, a showdown in 800 meters pitting Botswana's Nigel Amos, Kenyan David Rudisha, Djibouti's Ayanle Suleiman, and Ethiopia's Mohamed Aman is the draw card at the IAAF Diamond League in Zurich today, Thursday. Ethiopians Mukhtar Edris and Yeneo Alemireu, along with Kenyan Caleb Mwangangi Ndiku, are set to dominate the 5,000 meters as Botswana's Isaac Makwala and South African Wade Fanny Kirk sprint in 400 meters. On the infield, Egypt's Ihab Abdelrahman El Sayed and Kenyan Julius Yego compete in javelin, while Godfrey Mokwena contests the triple jump. In the women's events, Nigerian Blessing Okagbare and Ivory Coast's Muriel Ahore sprint in 100 meters as Ethiopian Hiwot Aeleo and Sofia Asefa renew their rivalry in 3,000-meter steeplechase, while Kenyan Helen Onsando Biri and Ethiopian Dawit Seyanum run the 1,500 meters. And that's it for Daybreak Africa Sports News. I'm Mark Ouma in Johannesburg, South Africa. Back to you, James, in Washington.
Thank you, Mark. Have a good day. Here's our listener mail for this Thursday morning, August 20th.
Good morning, Daybreak Africa. This is William Poku from Monrovia, Liberia. I am totally disappointed with African countries who have closed their border with Guinea, Suriname, and Liberia, and also stopped our citizens from traveling to their country. I think this does not reflect African solidarity and African unity. I'm calling on the regional African countries that have been classified as Ebola countries to immediately report their ambassadors from those countries and reduce diplomatic relations immediately. Thank you.
We thank you, listener, for your comment, and please send your viewpoints to Daybreak Africa at voanews.com. Briefly, before we leave you a summary of Africa news, the president of Niger's parliament is said to be arrested and questioned for his alleged involvement in a baby trafficking ring. That's it for this Thursday, August 25th edition of Daybreak Africa. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa crew, producer Nicole Beckford, reporter Peter Clotty and Ricky Shryak, as well as sports editor Mark Ullman, I'm James Barton, Washington, wishing that you will have a peaceful and healthy Thursday.
Are you wandering around lost in a musical desert? Well, follow your ears to the fantastic, the one and only African music mix on the Voice of America. VOA. Bathe yourself in this musical oasis. From the north to the south and from the east to the west, the African Music Mix plays only the best. Tune in from 0 to 300 hours UTC and from 11 to 1300 hours UTC every single day on the Voice of America.